Call your attention this morning to the Old Testament. I want you to, most of you can find Daniel. I want you to go to the book right after Daniel. It is the first of what is called the Minor Prophets. We're going to be looking at Hosea today. Somebody says, well, why are they called the Minor Prophets? Well, it's not because they're less inspired. The minor prophets are just as inspired as the major prophets. The titles come, or the description comes, from the volume of content. Hosea is a smaller book than, say, Daniel, as far as the volume of words that are in it. And so, therefore, it is called the first of the minor prophets. It's just smaller. That's the only reason. It's not less inspired. The Holy Ghost of God inspired Hosea just as it did Isaiah. And so I want you to turn to Hosea this morning. The title of the message is, Are We Gomer? Or Are You Gomer? Now, I know what you just had flash in your mind. Gomer Pyle, USMC. You say, how do you know it flashed? Because it always flashes in my mind. When I'm a kid and I'm watching television and that came on, I'm telling you, that was one funny program. I could visualize a Sergeant Carter in real life and how that he would have somebody, how in the world did they get into the Marine Corps and be like that? And him almost have a stroke on every episode. How many of you remember Shazam? That's exactly one of the things that old Gomer used to say. But we're going to be talking about a different Gomer today. This is not a man. This is a woman. Now, I don't know if I could have ever dated a girl named Gomer. But at the same time, Hosea is commanded to find a girl, and that's the one that he found. Now, there's going to be something specific about her. But before we get into that, I want you to know this, that Hosea is what is called the deathbed prophet. Now, I've known of preachers that were called, death preachers because they did so many funerals. Be honest with you. I'm feeling that moniker myself recently. But I've known of people that would do many, many funerals. There was a man, and I've read about him in it's either Baptist history or church history, and I have tried and tried to find the man's name, and it'll pop up one day. But he was a minister during what is called the Black Plague. And every single day, he was doing between 30 and 40 funerals a day. I don't know how emotionally he was able to handle that. This past Friday, when I got home sometime around, I guess, about 4:30, I told Deb, I said, I got to go lay down. I took my shoes off, I took my suit off, and I laid down, and I slept for 3 hours. In the middle of the afternoon. And the reason is because of the week and the, not the physical stress, but really the emotional stress. And so you have people that have to preach things that are hard. And so he is called the deathbed prophet, not because of the preaching of funerals, but because he is telling them of the death of their nation. Now you remember after Solomon, the nation of Israel split in two. You had the northern 10 tribes, which were called Israel. That is the area where Hosea was basically born. Now he is going to be talking to Judah as well, but he is a prophet to the north predominantly. His ministry was over 40 years. And he has the sad job of proving to them how sinful they are. And his ministry in this book was written somewhere between 755 and 725 BC. If it's 725 BC, it would only be 3 years that they had left. Because in 722 BC, the Assyrians came into the north and basically wiped it out. They took people into captivity. They put hooks in their jaws and took them into that captivity. They were slaves the rest of their life. Many of them died along the way. Women that were pregnant with babies were butchered. Old people were left to starve to death. They took the choicest of young people to be slaves back in Assyria, their capital city being, of course, Nineveh. Hosea had to prophesy that. And so he is called the deathbed prophet for that reason. Now, the time in which he lived, he basically was a forerunner of Jeremiah. Now, Jeremiah was a prophet to the south. He was called the weeping prophet because in all the years that he preached, he didn't have a single convert. Not one person ever listened to Jeremiah. Hosea knew exactly how he felt because the people of the north didn't really want to listen to him either. And so he was a forerunner of Jeremiah. And the ministries that the people remembered about two of the great prophets, Elijah and Elisha, they were still fresh in these people's minds. Elisha and Elijah had only lived about 100 years prior to this. Well, you know what we still talk about today? We still talk about things like World War II, and that's been 70 years ago. We still talk about Pearl Harbor. There's times that we even talk about World War I. In a few days, you'll hear some things about the Revolutionary War. You know, we're about to turn 249 years old. And so you've got Elijah and Elisha, those two Old Testament prophets that God used in spectacular ways. Their stories are still really ringing in the people's minds during the time of this writing. But the same prophets that preached about serving Jehovah God, even though they remembered the stories, it does not drive them to this. Hence, we come to Hosea today. I want you to remember this parallel. I want you to remember Hosea equals God. Gomer equals Israel slash us. So whenever we read about Hosea, and I say something about Hosea, I want you to think about that man, but I also want you to think about how God is represented by that man. And when I say Gomer, I want you to think about how that lady, and I use that term loosely, that lady represents Israel slash me and you. And so I want to give you three things today. I want you to remember, first of all, I want you to remember Hosea's challenge. Now, I don't know of anybody else that was challenged in this particular way. Now, you had some other people that were challenged. Jonah was told to go to Nineveh and preach. He didn't want to go. I won't go. And God had to put him in the belly of a fish, take him down to the bottoms of the sea, and I really believe that he literally died there. And so God gave him an experience that other people have not had. So Hosea has an experience that other people have not had. There's a challenge that God gives to him. And before we get to that in verse number 2, I just want to give you a proof passage how that he's not just from the north, but he is also wanting the people of Judah to pay attention. Look at verse 1. The word of the Lord came unto Hosea, the son of Beeri, in the days of Uzziah. Uzziah was a southern king. Jotham, southern king. Ahaz, southern king. Hezekiah, southern king. And it says that they were kings of Judah. Judah is the south. And in the days of Jeroboam, the son of Joash, king of Israel, that's north. And so both parts of the kingdom, whether it be the southern or the northern part, are referenced here by the great prophet Hosea. Now his challenge, look with me at verse 2. The beginning of the word of the Lord by Hosea. There's no doubt that it is God that's giving him this instruction. And the Lord said to Hosea, go, take unto thee a wife of whoredoms and children of whoredoms. Now, there's two ways that you can look at this. You can look at it where that Hosea was to go and literally find a prostitute and marry her. Or he could go to an area that was known for prostitutions and find someone that was from that background, but that she may not be a prostitute. But she was certainly there amongst those type of people. You say, well, why do you reference that? Do you remember Mary Magdalene? Mary Magdalene came from a place called Magdala. If you were to visit Israel, which not a lot of people are doing that these days, but if you were to visit Israel, one of the areas around the Sea of Galilee is called Magdala. That's where Mary was from. Now, it was known for several things, but one of the things that it was known for is it was known for prostitution. You fast forward a few hundred years, probably about, 1,200 years, and you have a Catholic Pope, and he makes the pronouncement, Mary Magdalene was a harlot. There is nothing in the scripture that says that. It says that she had 7 demons cast out of her. But just because you're raised in a place does not make you what that place is known for. Do you see that? If you were born in San Francisco, does that mean you're homosexual? No, it does not mean that at all. And so you can take this either way, but one of the things that we are told is that Hosea said, you go and you take a wife from those people. Now, I don't really know how obedient I could have been for that. You say, well, you would have been obedient. No, I don't know that. And I don't know if you would have been either. But Hosea was. Hosea was a man that was willing to do what God said. I'd like to think that I would be. But God's never given me a task like this. When I got ready to get married, you know, I had a wonderful bride-to-be. Forgot the name, it's called fiance. All right? Had a wonderful, you know, when you get old, sometimes you forget words and you're going, come on now, it's there. You know? I had a wonderful fiance, wonderful reputation, wonderful testimony, wonderful people. I loved being around her people. I was playing basketball for our college, and we were taking a tour down through Florida, and Deb was back at school studying, and I was playing ball. And we stopped in Tampa, and we played a ball game, and we played in Orlando a day or two later, and then we played in Tampa. Then we got all the way down to Miami, and we were playing Florida Bible College. And her parents, they were like, well, you can come and stay with us. She was nowhere. She was in Atlanta. And I was like, well, that'd be good. That'd be good. And so I went and I spent with the Fontaines a couple of days. They let me drive her car. She wasn't thrilled about that. But I got to drive that little red Pinto. And, I would hang around and I would help him cut grass. And let me tell you something. I knew how to get the parents on my team. And I knew if I got the parents on my team that I was going to be in like Flint. And so I helped Blue cut grass, and then he was like, you know, hey, we got a lake behind the house. We'll go swimming if you want to. Well, some buddies of mine came by, and they had a ski boat. And they said, hey, why don't you go skiing with us? You know, we don't play ball till tomorrow. You know, we'll have fun today. And so they brought this ski boat by, and come on, man, let's go. I said, no, I'm going to stay here, and I'm going to help Mr. Fontaine cut grass. I wasn't stupid. I knew exactly what I was doing. And so 3 or 4 hours later, they come back by, and we had just finished, and I was getting ready to go jump in. I was going to take my shirt off, and I already had shorts on, and just jump in the lake. And all of a sudden, my buddies come around, and they're standing there, and then here comes Mr. Fontaine, and I hate to even tell you this, but he's been in heaven a long time. He goes, hey, guys, and takes off running and dives in, and his britches come off. And they have razzed me about that. Everyone, I mean, for years they would say, hey, Dad lost his britches anymore? And he didn't care. He got up pulling his pants up, you know, and we're just having a great time. But I didn't have that kind of family problems at the get-go. She came from a great family. But Gomer didn't. The challenge was, you go to that group of people. You know what I equate this to, young people? Going to bars and juke joints and finding a spouse. That's what I equate that to. If you're looking in hell holes, that's what you're going to find. If you want to find somebody that would be a good partner, hang out at the church. Hang out with Christian people. Hang out with people that at least want to love the Lord. That's where you find the right kind of folks. But he's told to go right into the belly of the beast, so to speak. And so he says, I want you to go. I want you to take a wife of whoredoms and the children of whoredoms. In other words, there's a reputation that's been going on generationally. And it says, for the land hath committed great whoredom, departing from the Lord. Do you see the parallel? In other words, Hosea, you go take a wife from this area because that's the lifestyle they live. And now he is equating that to Israel and how they're treating the Lord. They have departed from living for the Lord, and now Hosea has got to live this as an example to these people. So if we keep reading, the first part of verse 3 says, so he, Hosea, went and took Gomer. Now, I have a tendency to think that it's the second description that I gave you, that he is thinking that if I choose her, maybe she won't necessarily be like she was raised. I think he was hoping against hope. The word Gomer means completion. And so I don't know what she completed. I know that when Adam was given Eve, she was given for a helpmeet, a completer. So maybe as he chose her by her name, maybe he thought she can complete me, and maybe God can get the message across with her people, but not her specifically. And can I tell you that I have known of young men and young women just like this? We have a missionary right now that we support at this church. If I called his name, some of you would know that name. We've been supporting him for probably 4 or 5 years now. He came to a mission conference that we had, and he was invited because I heard his story at a board meeting. This was the testimony. So-and-so has wanted to become a missionary with our board. This is how he got saved. His mother was a hooker. He never knew who his daddy was. His mother did not want her son to be raised in that lifestyle, but she had no way out. She had no man. She had no family that she could rely on. And so she found a little place that was next door to a little Baptist church. And this little Baptist church had a visitation ministry. And they invited kids, and they knew that she had a little boy, and they said, would you let him come to our Sunday school? Would you let him come to our children's church? And it was within a walking distance, and she said, well, I guess that would be good. And that little boy began to go to church at that little small Baptist church. The mother got saved. The boy got saved. The church loved that lady. They began to help her. They found her a job. They supported her. And that little guy grew up to be a teenager. God called him to preach. He went to Bible college, found a girl that wanted to be a missionary like he did. They got married, and they are on the mission field today. I'd never met this kid before. And all I'm thinking as I'm sitting there listening to this story, we supporting him. If I got to bring it out of my own pocket, we supporting him. You know why? Because he bucked the odds. It was not in the cards from a statistical standpoint for him to make it. But the grace of God does that over and over and over again. And I think that that is exactly what Hosea was hoping for in his marriage to Gomer. Now, she had a daddy, and his name was Diblaim. Do you know what that means? That means a cluster of figs. Now, I don't know about you, but when I think of a cluster of figs, I think of something that is pleasant. I think of something that is enjoyable. There's something about fruit that is really good. We went to Elijah and Allie's reception last night. And on the dessert table, they had these little pies. They were in little tins, so that's why I'm calling them a pie. It may have another name. And they had apple. And they had, I know, strawberry. And they might have had one or two other flavors. And I got one of them strawberries. That thing was so good, if I hadn't have been in company, I'd have got a second one. I'm thinking, that is one fine dessert. I think Ella might have made it. And I'm telling you, it was just so pleasant. And I think that when he saw her, he's thinking, man, she could complete me. He's looking at her and he's probably thinking, she's good looking. Now, you can say what you want, but it's hard for a man to want to marry a woman that he don't think's attractive. You say, you don't just go on looks. I know. But that's the first step. When my wife walked by me, I got whiplash. When she walked by, I'm going, and I'm thinking, I need to know her. And if you're honest, you had that first thought as well. You know, they say that, you know, beauty's skin deep, but ugly goes all the way to bone. And I think that he looked at her and thought, you know, she's attractive. I know she comes from a bad group, but maybe it'll be okay. That's the way that I look at the challenge that he had. And so there is a sweetness. And can I tell you that he had a hope for his marriage, that it is sweet? I'm going to tell you something. Marriages, when people get along, are a lot better. A lot better. The Bible says that it's better to dwell in the corner of a housetop than with a brawling woman. Dr. Hudson used to say there's four things that if you ladies will do, you can't run that man off with a shotgun. Number one, cook good meals. If you will cook him some good meals, he'll be happy. Number two, keep a clean house. There's a difference between dirt and dirty dirt. Dirt is just like when the baby's, you know, tumped over the toy chest. Dirty dirt's when that same toy chest has been tumped over for a week. Number three, give him plenty of love and affection. Number four, don't nag. And if you'll do those four things, you can't run him off. And so a sweet home is a good thing. Now, sometimes it takes a while to get there. First year Debbie and I were married, she hit me with a mop. God is my witness, she hit me in the back with a mop. I've never hit her, but the Lord knows I wanted to. But can I tell you that in the last few years, it's as though everything's just got tweeter and tweeter, as the old Uncle Buddy Robinson used to say with that lisp, tweeter and tweeter. It's just a good thing. Where there's peace and contentment, it's just good. I think that's what his hope was. Let me give you a second thing this morning. I want you to see the children that came along. Now, I don't know how long the honeymoon was, but I know that immediately when the kids started coming, there was some trust issues. There were some things that were going to be happening. I want you to look with me at the latter part of verse 3. So he took Gomer, the daughter of Diblaim, which conceived, which seems to be fairly quickly, and bare him a son. So the first child that came along, it seems as though that Hosea is the father. And the Lord said unto him, call his name Jezreel. Now, most people would have said, no, don't call that boy Jezreel. Call him Bar Hosea. You see, the little prefix bar means son of. And so you've got son of Hosea. And he was going to be excited. I mean, he had a boy. He's got a man child from the Lord. That's probably his thinking. But God said, you call his name Jezreel. What does Jezreel mean? Well, if you look it up in a Bible dictionary, one of the things that you'll find is it means that God sows or scatters. Now, Jezreel is a place throughout the scripture. Sometimes it's called the Valley of Jezreel. We also know it by another name. Has anybody ever heard of the Valley of Megiddo? You say, not ringing a bell. What about Armageddon? Does the Battle of Armageddon mean anything to you? The Valley of Jezreel is where many of the major battles that have happened throughout history have taken place. That's where the Battle of Armageddon is going to take place. And so you've got this little boy. His name is Jezreel. And there is that valley that's there today. And during this time, not only was there the valley called Jezreel, but there was a city that sat on the edge of it that was called Jezreel. So it's not only a plain, there's a city. You say, that's weird. Have you ever heard of New York? When we say New York, what do you think? You think New York City. Okay? That's where Texas Pete is not made. And so you have Jezreel, which is an area, but it's also a city. And so it means that God literally takes and scatters. What is the scattering about? It's the scattering of judgment. And so he tells Hosea, you name that boy Jezreel. If you notice, it says, and I will avenge the blood. What is that a reference to? Well, if you go back about 100 years during the time of Elijah, what you find is you find that there's a story and the king is named Ahab. Ahab and his wife Jezebel. And so you have this king, and he notices right next to the palace, there's a nice little parcel of land that's got a little fence around it. And I mean, the vineyard is flourishing. There are grapes that are growing everywhere. And he's thinking, I'd like to have that vineyard. So he goes over to the man that owns it, a man named Naboth. And Naboth goes, I'm honored that the king would want my land. But this land has been in my family. I cannot sell this. This is a family inheritance. My daddy had it. His daddy had it. His daddy had it. And so no matter how much you're offering, no matter what other good piece of land that you would give to me, I cannot do it. And Ahab got the poochie lip. I can't believe he won't sell that to me. I'm the king. So he's in his bedroom and he's curled up in a fetal position, sulking. And old Jezebel comes in. What's the matter, big boy? Naboth wouldn't sell me his vineyard. I'll take care of it. Next thing you know, she has a couple of witnesses that began to make accusations. Naboth cursed God and cursed the king. And Naboth goes, I did no such a thing. I didn't. Yes, you did. We heard you. And the next thing you know, they took that man out and murdered him. And the king took that vineyard because of the deed that his wife had performed. I believe that's the blood that is referenced here. You read about that in 1 Kings. There's another story in 2 Kings 9. And in 2 Kings 9, you've got a king named Joram. And he is going to battle, and the next thing you know, it's a setup, and he gets assassinated. That may be the reference that is here. But when it says that I will avenge the blood, I will send judgment, I will sow it, I will scatter it and sling it. And so we see Jezreel. But look at verse 6. It says that, and she conceived again and bare a daughter. Now there's a little question about who the father is here. He's pretty sure that Jezreel is his boy. But now he's got this girl that comes along. And God said unto him, call her name Lo-Ruhamah. And it says, for I will no more have mercy upon the house of Israel. There's our parallel again. In other words, you had the parallel of marrying a woman from whoredom, and that's what Israel had done. They had gone after other gods. And now there's a child, and there is no mercy that's going to be given to this little girl. And Israel is not going to have any mercy. It won't be long before that judgment that God talked about with Jezreel will be coming in the form of the Assyrians. And he says, but I will have mercy upon the house of Judah. You remember in verse number 1, he was talking to Judah and Israel. Israel, because they were more wicked, will not have mercy. Judah is going to last for about another 110 years or so. They will have the Babylonians that will come in 605, then again in 597, and then again in 586. And by the time that third one comes, everything's gone that's of any value. But Judah's going to make it another century plus. And so you've got her name, and it means no mercy. But then look at verse 8. Now when she had weaned Lo-Ruhamah, she conceived and bare a son. And so this son, God said, you call his name Lo-Ami. And what is that? Not my people. By this time, Hosea knows that that third kid's not his. When you've not been intimate with your wife because she's been running the roads, you know it's not yours. The second one was a question. The third one, no doubt. And so, I mean, you see that the kids are right involved here. Can I tell you one of the sad things about homes that are hell on earth is that the kids are involved in it. That's one of the worst things. I remember, and I hate to say this because some of the kids may be listening to it. I hear that they like to watch us online. But when I was a little boy growing up, before the man next door got saved, he would beat holes in the drywall with the butt of a shotgun, knock holes in with like a baseball bat. The kids would run out. They would be screaming. The mother would come out. And I remember my dad, who was a cop, they didn't even knock on the door. They just come running into our house when he was in one of those drunken stupors. And, he'd get drunk, hardworking man during the week. But when he got paid, he was getting drunk. That's just the way it was. And on one particular Saturday night, he had really tied one on, and I'm going to kill all of them. That was his attitude. And they ran out of the house. The mother and those four kids, they came bursting through our door. You got to help us. You got to help us. And my dad stepped out on the front porch with his .38. And as a kid, I'm scared to death. And I'm hearing this through the door that's open. My dad called his name and said, "You need to go back in your house and sleep it off. I'm coming in to get him." And my daddy said, "If you put your foot on the step, I'm going to drop you in the yard." Now, I'm going to tell you something. That gives me chills as a 68-year-old man. But that's what my daddy told him. That was the kind of home those kids lived in. Thanks be to God, the man got saved before he died. And God forgave him. But those kids were always appreciative of my parents giving them protection. You got this home life right here. These kids don't even know if they got the same daddy. They don't know. Why? Because their mother is running the roads. Is that not what Israel was doing to God? The Bible all through Hosea talks about them worshiping Baalim. When you see the word Baal and then the I-M on the end of it, that means there was multiple Baals. It wasn't just one god that was called Baal. It was many gods that were called Baal. It's called Baalim. And so you've got this allure of the world. I mean, you would think that a child would say, okay, it's time for the mom to settle down. But there's some not like that. And Israel was exactly like that. And so we see the children. But there's a third thing that I want you to see, is I want you to see Hosea / God's compassion. Look with me at chapter 2. He's begging his kids, plead with your mother, verse 2. That's a hard thing for kids. When you got a daddy that's saying, go tell your mama to act right. He's doing everything that he can to try to help her. He's giving her food, and she didn't know where it came from. She thinks that one of her lovers has done it. But he's done it. When you see some of the I wills, those are negative. But when you hit verse number 9, I believe it is, you can see that it turns positive about what he would like to do. He said, I'm gonna take the corn away. In other words, he was going to give her some tough love. He's going to talk about, I will destroy her vines and her fig trees. That's tough love. But then in verse 14, he begins to say things like this. I will allure her. In other words, I'll court her again. I'll take her out to eat again. And if I begin to be nice to her again, then she'll want me again. I will give her vineyards. In other words, she's gone for weeks and weeks at a time. But if she comes back, I'll give her this. So it's almost a bribe. I will take away the names of Baalim out of her mouth. In other words, I'll say, don't use those words anymore. It'll make the Lord happy. And it says, and in that day, I'll make a covenant for them with the beast. with the fowls, with the creeping things. In other words, God's saying, Hosea, you do this for her, but I will do this for Israel if they will come back. I will have compassion so much that the beast of the field will reproduce. I will make sure that the vines are flourishing and they can have a flourishing grape vineyard. I'll make sure that even the bugs are not going to eat the crops. It'll be just a utopia, what I will do for them. But they wouldn't do it. They kept running. But can I tell you that God, in His compassion, did the same thing for us? I've heard people say things like this. Well, bless God, if I had a woman like that, I wouldn't take her back. What you don't understand is this. You are not Hosea. You're Gomer. You're the one that's doing that. I'm the one that's doing that. Just like ancient Israel was the one that was doing that. Do we not sing that song sometimes? Brother Keith leads us in that phrase of that song. And I never sing that phrase that I don't think of me. Prone to wander, Lord, I feel it. Prone to leave the God I love. Don't we sing that? Our sin natures, man, they make us have desires. They make us want to run the roads. Makes us want to do things that Christians ought to have no part in. But God in His compassion, what does He do? He just keeps working with us. I want you to look with me at chapter 3. We're almost done. And in chapter 3, she has gone so far. Her lovers have used her up. They don't want her anymore. They're not giving her money anymore. They're not giving her food anymore. They're not giving her a place to crash. They're not supplying her with dope. No, she doesn't have anything. The only thing she can now do is be sold into slavery, which is basically what human trafficking is today. One of the great things that I have admired about our governor, Governor Kemp, and his wife, is the fight that they have had about human trafficking in Georgia. That's been a good thing. And so you've got her, and she is now standing on the slave block. And so what does verse 2 say? So I bought her to me. He said, I bought her for 15 pieces of silver and for an homer of barley and a half a homer of barley. Barley was the most economically cheap grain that there was. He had 15 and a half bushels of cheap grain and 15 pieces of silver, and he said, I'll buy her. When we were worthless, that's what Jesus did. In Sunday school this morning, we talked about, for you are bought with a price. We have been bought by the precious blood of the Lord Jesus Christ. And so the problem is not that we're Hosea. God's Hosea. The problem is that we all want to act like Gomer. Two closing thoughts. God's been so good to us, but we need to remember this. God's promises are not always positive. Let that sink in. We have a tendency to always talk about the goodness of God, the blessings of God, and they are blessings. I can't tell you about the goodness of God without just getting kind of overwhelmed with it in my soul. God's been so good to me, and God's been good to you. But can I tell you that some promises are not positive? Did He not tell them? He said, Israel will have no mercy. Judah will have a little bit. He said, if you will come back, this is what I will do for you. But if you don't, then you won't. And we always want to think about the love of God, the love of God. And I hear people all the time. I saw something last night that made me want to upchuck. That's a word which means puke. Two ministers supposedly are married, and they're both men. And I thought, God help their debauched souls. And I mean, their congregation put up with it. Can I tell you something? That is a church of Satan. You say, no, they named the name of Christ. No, they may name the name of Christ, but that's the church of Satan. If I die and go to heaven, and you bring in somebody, another preacher that's married to a man, now I know you'd never do that, but if you did, I'm going to ask God to let me come back from heaven. I'm going to burn your church down. We don't put up with that kind of stuff. As a Christian, you and I ought to say, Lord, I'm yours. But God promises are not always positive. And I'm a positive guy. I look at a glass as being half full. That's the way I just always been that way. But I know this. I know if you touch an electric fence, you get popped. I know that. Number two, God's punishment is not punitive. It's not for just anger. It's not just to damage us. It's always to bring us back. He wants us to do right. And when we name the name of the Lord, that ought to be our desire. Let's just stay with the Lord. Are we Gomer? Yeah. Yeah, we are. We're all prone to wander. We all feel it. We're all prone to leave the God we love. But you don't have to. You ought not to. We ought to be dedicated to the Lord. In these times of uncertainty, in these times of immorality, hey, let's not embrace nonsense. Let's embrace what the Word of God has to say. Let's understand that the Lord wants us. He wants us to be a cluster of figs, something that is joyful. And our relationship should be one that is sweet and satisfying, just like a husband and wife, whenever they're first married and they go on their honeymoon. It's something that's beautiful and something that is enjoyable and something that is pleasant and something that ought to be really aim toward. That ought to be our relationship with the Lord.